This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 229, where AC and I catch up on AWS Invent News and a cloud container catch-up, recorded live December 6th, 2017.
ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 5 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check us out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Hola, amigo.
What's up, Mexican friend?
I'm back.
How was vacation, man?
Oh, dude. So relaxing.
Very relaxing.
Cool. Kids had an absolute blast, which means parents have an absolute blast. We went down there with friends and they had an absolute blast. So it was a very, very relaxing time. It was nice.
Yeah, you seem like you've been gone for like 2 or 3 weeks. All the pictures have been seen on Facebook and everything, but man, it looked like it was just perfect weather. And
yeah,
just,
I'm pretty sure all of our friends hate us.
Every December you get that, right?
Like, stop posting all these pictures. Yeah. You sound a little groggy. What's up? Where are you at?
Oh, yeah. I'm in Chicago right now for the SP Fest Chicago conference. Gotcha. I did a full-day workshop yesterday, stayed up talking to friends and everything last night, and
just traveling generally on air and the whole nine yards, huh?
Yeah, it went from 60 degrees Fahrenheit the other day, and overnight, or I guess throughout one day, went from 60 degrees, fell like 30 or 40 degrees just in one day, and the wind was howling like crazy. And so it's nice to be in a really cool city, and I'm like, you know, the conference center is attached to the hotel, and I don't think I need to leave the building for a few days.
Just walk between them. Nice.
Just use the tunnel across. So
hey, it's like Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. It's a cool show. I really like SP Fest. They do a really good job with this show, and it's well run. Had a good workshop yesterday. Filled packed room doing
awesome
SharePoint framework stuff, and I got a couple other sessions today, or sorry, tomorrow and the next day. And man, I did the crazy thing too with the session. I decided, what the hell? Let's totally redo the demo. So I'm in the middle of redoing a demo right now, which may not be the wisest thing.
Have you got 24 hours?
I've got more than, it's not until, so what we're recording this like 11 a.m. It's not until 4:30 tomorrow. So, yeah. And I've got nothing today. So I'm just sitting in the hotel room just working on it. So
yeah. It reminds me of that comment that Scott Guthrie made on the podcast about learning the demo the day before.
Pretty much, man. I mean, this is, yeah, I decided to change it up. It's a pretty cool demo, and I decided to do it to build something for myself that I've wanted to use. But yeah, I know you're hosting the show this week, but I have something that I haven't shared with you yet that you're going to be, that we need to kind of dig in and kind of explore what's going on.
Yeah.
We have a good and a bad problem that's picked up with the podcast in the last probably 2 months.
Our feed's too big, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. That's one. Okay. We're going to get that fixed. But our costs are skyrocketing. Our storage costs are skyrocketing. We are getting a ton of new traffic coming in. And we haven't run our stats recently, but by far my Azure cost is now dominated by data transfer out for podcasts.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's a great problem to have. I mean, I say our costs are skyrocketing. It's not like we're, you know, financially in trouble or anything like that with the cost of the podcast. But I was like, why was that bill that high that month? I just went and looked at it a minute ago. I noticed it's happened like the last like 2 or 3 months. And I just went and looked at my Azure portal just a few minutes ago before we jumped on the call. Mm. And I was like, well, what's the cost breakdown? It goes, oh, look, it's the Microsoft Cloud Show blob storage and it's data transfer out for those two tags. And I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Wow, that is cool. Yeah, we need to really do up our stats again and see where things are at.
There's only two things that have changed though that I didn't know if it impacted it. So one was it started a little bit after Ignite. We did a live show and we had some cool stuff with the live show with all the other shows we did. And then the other thing that's a little bit different, or that we noticed a difference, is that our show is also now being syndicated, or not just syndicated, but advertised, get visibility, whatever, on the Collab 365 community site.
Oh, yeah.
So those two things happened at about the same time. Hmm. And costs went up about the same time. So that's good. Reaching more people.
Yeah, that sounds like more downloads, which is awesome. We should take a look at our stats again, I guess. I'm not very good at that. I don't really look often enough, but really should take a look at that. But hey, well, maybe we should start a Kickstarter for your blob storage. There you go.
No, man, we got great sponsors. Sponsors are making this possible and everything. So between AvePoint and ShareGate and Zscaler and Nintex, we got some great sponsors that are helping make the show possible. So you guys that are listening to the show, again, we've said it one or two times, please jump over and onto Twitter and just do an at mention to one of our sponsors or all of our sponsors and say thank you very much for supporting the podcast, because that's once they know that they're being noticed on the podcast, that gives them a better chance of doing it again. So
yeah, we're very thankful to them, obviously, and please do anything you can do. Yeah,
absolutely.
While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as a leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
Okay, now on to some meat and potatoes of the show. AWS Invent was last week, was it? Or was it the week before? It's all Mexico time for me right now.
I don't see a cerveza. What the heck, man?
It's below the table. Intravenous.
Hey, <now. laughs> Keep it clean. I think it was like 2 weeks ago or something. It was around the late November. I know what it was. It was the worst time to run a conference. It was the week immediately following Thanksgiving in the U.S., so everyone's trying to fly on the Sunday after Thanksgiving for AWS Ignite or Invent.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's and right. When everybody else is also trying to get home.
Yeah, that crept up, actually. I mean, I heard that it was happening, but yeah, I think I was heading off to Mexico and just saw some news coming in and bits and bobs. You seem to have kept across some of it. Do you want to kick us off and run us through a little bit of what you heard about there? There's obviously some big ones that kind of compete with some recent Microsoft announcements that I thought were really interesting.
Yeah, there are. There's a couple things. I mean, I'll throw one in here because it doesn't really have, it's not an AWS thing, but it's something I did notice that, you know how Azure released their container service, their managed container service. We talked about it a little bit on the show, and one of the things
AKS.
One of the cool things about it was that you only pay for the resources that you consume. You don't pay for the actual management of Kubernetes. So like Kubernetes is effectively free, and the hosting of Kubernetes is free. You just pay for the VMs that run the containers. So I noticed that last week, I didn't get a chance to share this with you because I know you were in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Google changed their pricing model for their managed container service to where they are now no longer charging for Kubernetes. Like,
interesting.
Good job, Azure. Good job.
Nice. Go Cloud Wars.
Yeah, exactly. So on the AWS side, there's a ton of announcements that came out of this. I'm going to focus on three of them, though. So one of them is a pretty good compete against Azure. It's called AWS Media Services, and they're announcing a bunch of new media services that are available for things like video and transcoding and stuff like that. So let me rattle a couple of these guys off. As they describe it, they're launching an array of broadcast quality media services, each designed to address one or more aspects of the challenges that are outlined in a blog post that we have in the show notes. They have a thing called, they're all called AWS Elemental. So it's AWS Elemental Media Convert. So file-based transcoding for over the air and over the top stream. Over the top is like streamed stuff. Or broadcast and archiving with support for a long list of different formats and codecs. There's Media Live, which is a live encoding to deliver video streams in real time to both television and multi-screen devices. There's a media package, a video originating and just-in-time packaging format for taking a single input and produce multiple output streams, things coming out, to where you can also add things like monetization models, time-shifted live streams, ad insertion, DRM, and blackout management. A media store, an optimized media storage that enables high-performance, low-latency applications such as live streaming while taking advantage of scalability and durability of Amazon's S3 service. There's a media tailor, a monetization service that supports ad serving and server-side ad insertion. Some of these things here, those, the packaging and the tailoring where you can go do the monetization and insertion of like time shifts for live streaming, blackout management. I know DRM is a little bit supported inside of Azure services, but I don't know what the Azure Media offering, how they have on the what they've got on the monetization side. I don't think there's monetization on the Azure side. AWS one, that's a big thing to really add here. That's really cool though.
Yeah, that's pretty comprehensive. I wonder, looking at some of the screenshots they've got here of how you set some of these things up, they're pretty complicated, right? There's lots of acronyms and lots of codec names and lots of quality and rate control stuff and lots of media specific things, bit rates and blah, blah, blah. It's not made for the average punter, right? It's built for people looking to build sites and apps and things like that that deal with a lot of media and different encoding and outputs and all that sort of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this stacks up against the Azure offering, because I know they've put a lot of effort into things like this the last couple of years as well, which will be interesting. Could you see yourself using something like this for the work that you do with videos?
If I wanted to, yes. I like the fact that you can have like, you know, you can overlay it, you can watermark the videos on the fly, you can do DRM. I like all of that. I've looked at doing that with Azure in the past. The thing that this stuff gets expensive really, really fast. Mm-hmm. Video gets expensive really, really fast. Mm-hmm. And as much as I would like to do like DRM, I mean, my stuff isn't all live stuff, but it doesn't, I don't see the payoff for someone like me. I think this stuff makes a lot of sense for someone, you know, if it's like an NBC or if it's like an ABC or a big network. Gotcha. Or a local network. Or if you're doing a lot of live stuff, delivery of stuff like that, maybe it makes sense for like a Pluralsight kind of a company or a Udemy kind of a company. But for me, like the stuff that I get from Wistia, I think is already perfect. I don't see, the one thing that I see that's missing from this, and it's also missing from the Azure side as well, is that they don't have a lot of like marketing capabilities in this. They have monetization capabilities, but there's nothing around like marketing. So like one of the things I like to do is, I like to do like a webinar. I'm going to start doing webinars and I'll record the webinar and I'll keep it, but I'll host it up on my site as like a public blog post or something. Anybody can go watch it and stream it, you know, whenever they like. But the payment model for me is to put like what they call a turnstile at the beginning of the videos. So you got to put in your email address to subscribe to my list. So that's the plan how I'm going to do it. You can't do something like that with the AWS side or the Azure side that I'm aware of without doing a lot of custom work. And these other marketing kind of video platforms really put a lot more of that stuff in there. It's a little more suited for it. So no, I don't see myself using it. How I'd love to get to the point where business was big enough and going fast enough to where I could justify the cost for this, because there are some features here that I would love to take advantage of, but yeah, it gets pricey quick.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. So that's one of the media big updates that they had. They had two other big announcements that came out that to me they're big competes against Azure. And I like the fact that they are, so before I say this, let me back up. AWS, from the container point of view, has been very different from how Google and Azure have hosted it, where Google and Azure are, let's go with the open platform, let's use these other orchestrators that are out there, let's not create our own story of it, so I don't have to do containers the Microsoft way or containers the Google way. AWS, you had to do containers really the Google way, or you just used AWS the same way that on IaaS, the same way you would with Google or Microsoft, where you say, I'm going to stand up a bunch of VMs, I'm going to put my orchestrator on there, whatever it is, and I'm going to manage it, or I'm going to use, like how you guys use it, Hyperfish, the Docker Cloud. AWS had their own kind of container service, but it was an AWS container service. Mm. What AWS announced at Invent was first a new service called AWS Fargate. And what Fargate is, in a nutshell, it's Azure Container Instances. It allows you to spin up containers without having to worry about the VMs. You don't have to worry about the managing of the infrastructure. I guess to put it simply, it's like EC2, which is their virtual machine offering. It's like EC2, but instead of giving you a virtual machine, you get a container. So
gotcha. You fire up a container and away you go.
Yeah, you fire it up and you're away you go. So you don't have to worry about that side of it. That's one big thing. So I'll have a link to that in the show notes. It's very simple to stand up. I haven't done it, but I looked at all the screenshots and everything. It's pretty simple to go through and set this stuff up. The pricing on it looks very comparable to what Azure charges. It's about 5 cents per hour for the virtual CPU and about a penny per gigabyte of memory. there's a ton of different configuration options that you can set up here. Like, for example, there's like 50 some configuration options for virtual CPUs and memory to support a ton of different workloads. So it's a nice offering, and it's a nice compete that they have against Azure now. So Azure's not the only one that has like containers on demand as an offering. Google still does not have that, but now AWS and Azure both have containers on demand with Azure Container Instances, or ACI, and AWS's Fargate.
Fargate, interesting. Now, I guess if you've got like a job packaged up as kind of as a container, you know, you want to run that job, you just fire up a container, do it on something like this, or on ACI, and you know, run the job, and you're done. You don't have to run the infrastructure.
I have a thing that I'm working on the side to manage, to process the data coming in from my customers that are watching the videos in my course. Mm-hmm. And it's all like, you know, I have raw logs of what's going on. So I have a couple of containers that are periodically looking at all the logs and figuring out someone's made it this percentage of the way through this chapter, and mm-hmm. you know, be able to have like some sort of a leaderboard kind of a thing that's up there specifically for the users, not to share what everybody else, what you're doing with everybody else.
Sure.
But also for my visibility to see, you know, which clips are people watching the most and all that. I get that same stuff with Wistia, but I don't get it the way that's like domain specific to my course. Hmm. I'm doing it on containers. I'm looking at this like, you know, why would I want to stand up my own cluster to go through and to have this environment running all the time, when instead really it just needs to run periodically? So I create like, say, a flow that is scheduled to run every 4 hours and says, go do this work, and it just spins up a bunch of containers to go run in ACI, and then they just all, when they're done, they just go away and I'm not paying for it anymore.
Yeah, gotcha.
And one thing that's cool, because well, I have all these different options, and which one's the best option? It's not like, well, you have to do it like this because this is your only option. So it's nice to have these options.
Yeah, fair enough.
So there was another big announcement they had, that AWS had, and this one is, again, just like a compete, kind of rounding out the story. With Azure, we've got something called the Managed Kubernetes Service that we just talked about a minute ago.
AKS.
AKS, yeah. And yep. Google has something similar. They have the Google Container Service, GKS. Mm-hmm. And now Amazon has the
EKS,
the Elastic Container Service, or for Elastic Container Service for Kubernetes. So it's EKS.
Gotcha.
Yeah, same thing. Allows you to make it easy to run Kubernetes on AWS without needing to install and operate your own Kubernetes clusters. So you provision a cluster, you deploy your nodes, you connect to EKS, and then you run your apps. So it's very, very straightforward. The exact same kind of setup that we have for Azure. Similar kind of a pricing model. I haven't seen exactly how the pricing is set up, and like, are they going to charge for the service, or you just charge for the hosting that like we talked about a minute ago? But it's in, the service is in preview. You have to sign up for the preview to actually get into it and start playing around with it. But another good offering.
I think it's really interesting, the timing of this. Obviously, they've been either forced to announce it because of what Microsoft has done or something along those lines. But don't you find it nice that Microsoft stepped out in the lead on this to begin with? They were first overall, but like,
yeah,
between Amazon and Microsoft. Amazon, in the past, you've had to run your own Kubernetes cluster pretty manual, like you would with IaaS type stuff on Azure in the past. And then Microsoft came out with their AKS managed Kubernetes offering in preview a few weeks ago, and we talked about it on the show, and we were just like, whoa, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And now, you know, 3 weeks later or 4 weeks later or whatever it is, Amazon come out with this announcement as well. I don't know. I just like the ordering of that.
Yeah.
Like, there's not that much time between them, but I like that Microsoft got the jump on them on this one.
Yeah, I agree. I feel the same way about it. I think it's very cool to see that. It was cool to see Microsoft got the jump on them, that they put this out there. You know, it's also nice to see Google had, you know, their container, their hosted container Kubernetes service. They've had that for, a year, maybe 2 years. But Azure's the one that comes out with it. They changed the pricing model. Google has to respond to it. And now AWS is like, oh yeah, so Kubernetes has changed the way that all this stuff is set up. One thing I do want to say about this, I got to go find the link to it. I find what the episode it was. There was a really good interview. If you're interested in the whole Kubernetes space, I think you would actually be interested in this interview. If you're interested in the Kubernetes space and like the state of containers and all that stuff, go check out an episode by the Cloudcast podcast. And Nigel Paulton was on it, and he talked a lot about the status of containers and Kubernetes and how things work. The thing that I found the coolest part about it was his discussion about where Docker is from a business point of view and what they were doing and why that they recently adopted Kubernetes or bringing Kubernetes in and how they're kind of growing up and stuff. You got a really good business case for it too. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. I'll try and find the episode number while we're going through this.
Yeah, I jumped into Overcast just as you were saying that, and that is episode 320. Oh, and it's named Docker Adds Kubernetes, Now What?
Yeah, yeah. It is a great episode.
And Nigel Poulton, cool. The EKS thing, they've obviously been working on this a while, and Microsoft's been working on it for a while, and Microsoft probably got word that they were going to announce it at AWS Invent, and so we're like, yeah, cool, let's go first.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. It's
a little bit of competition.
Yeah, just, I mean, from our point of view, from the consumer side, I mean, it's really, which one are you more comfortable with? I mean,
yeah,
it's Kubernetes. Where do you want to host it? Google, Amazon, or Microsoft? I don't know. I don't really care. Can kind of, who's got the best price?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
World is nice.
Excellent.
Yeah.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com. All right, so back to some more news. Why don't we just change things up a little bit? We talked a bunch about containers and some of the news at AWS Invent. I know we've got a little bit more coming from KubeCon in a second, but changing gears for a minute, why don't we chat about some Office 365 stuff first?
Sounds good to me. What do you got for us?
Hey, so you know how the world just waits, holding their breath for every time a Gartner Magic Quadrant or a Forrester Wave report comes out?
Yep, I was waiting for it. My week isn't complete yet.
Yeah, exactly. I knew you were. I could tell. You seemed so pent up and angry that it wasn't out yet.
I'm really excited for this.
Well, wait no longer, my friend. Microsoft OneDrive is recognized as a Forrester Wave leader in the Enterprise File Sync and Share report.
Oh, thank God.
I know. I know. You know, we joke about this, but lots of people read these, and lots of CIOs and CTOs and all that look to Gartner and Forrester for advice on what vendors are doing what and who's leading and all that. So it tends to matter a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have some opinions on these kinds of reports anyway, but I won't get into that. Microsoft recognized as a leader in this latest Wave report with regards to OneDrive and Enterprise File Sync and Share, which is kind of nice. We'll give credit where credit is due. They have made a lot of progress in the last 12 months. Or the last 12 months, definitely, but definitely the last 12 as well. They've done some good work, so it's nice to see it recognized. They are not the only person in the leader part of the Wave. However, they are to the top right of everybody else. So the others that are in the leader section of the Wave are, so there's Microsoft, Box, Google, and Citrix. Dropbox are in the strong performer category, not in the leader category, but they're very close to jumping into the leader section. But I think Dropbox just lack a significant number of enterprise controls and things like that that real enterprises need. But yeah, Microsoft, Google, Citrix, and Box are in that top leader area. Box is by far and away furthest to the right in terms of the strategy, so Forrester seem to think they've got the strongest strategy, but they're not the strongest in terms of the current offering. Microsoft is less strategically strong, but more strong in terms of current offering. And so they're sort of considered top right. Google, not far behind. They're a little lower on current offering, but roughly the same in terms of strategy as Microsoft. And Citrix is super close to Google in terms of strategy and offering. So it's pretty tight.
It seems to me that Microsoft are probably the reason why the offering is so much higher than everybody else's. I mean, substantially, when you look at this chart, it's got to be from just the enterprise controls. It's got to be from the integration with Office 365 with Office itself. I mean, it's just a really good rounded story there. I mean, I'm not a OneDrive customer, but they have done a tremendous job over the last year or so.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just in this making sync work, right? That was the obvious one, but I think it's the whole offering in terms of things like search and e-discovery and compliance, governance, and all that sort of stuff, all the controls, information protection and security and things like that, that all roll up into this. And so Microsoft do have a really strong offering for sure. It's just we like to poke fun at them that their sync didn't work very well.
Well, it didn't, but yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Apparently works a lot better now. So anyway, so that's the Forrester Wave. Now you can go get a free version of this if you link through from the Microsoft blog post on this. It's on the Office blogs. We will link to it in the show notes. And if you click through, there's a link at the very bottom of that page where you can get your complimentary report. So Microsoft have paid Forrester for the reprint rights for that. And you can go get a copy of this for yourselves to read where the good, bad, and ugly parts are and read much more about it.
Very cool.
Hey, there's one more before we move on. There is, speaking of OneDrive, staying on the same theme, you know how it's always been like super painful to share stuff out of OneDrive, especially externally? You're never quite sure if somebody's going to be able to get access to it. At Ignite earlier this year, Microsoft announced they were doing some more work with secure external sharing and the experience around that. It's starting to roll out through first release tenants, which started on October the 9th, I believe, something along those lines. And more people should be getting this stuff. So they're focusing on things like when you send somebody a link to get access to a document using their email address, that they actually can access that document.
That's important.
Yeah, it sounds really dumb and simple, but it wasn't that dumb and simple. So now you'll be able to send a link to somebody, type their email address in, they'll get a special link. And when you go to access that link, Microsoft will send a one-time code or something along those lines, almost like two-factor auth, to that email address again. So even if the link is forwarded to somebody, you still need to be the recipient of that email address to get the one-time code to get in. So some new options there. But there's also some, speaking of enterprise controls, there's the ability for them to re-verify the identity of that person. And so they'll sort of re-authenticate X many days, every X many days, I think 30 by default, to get new codes and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, some nice new experiences there. And you should notice that in your tenants if your first release started rolling out in October a couple of months ago. So we should be getting close there.
This is interesting. I hadn't seen this announcement from Ignite or how it's rolling out. So this blog post before, this is a sharing story has definitely gotten a hell of a lot better. This is nice.
Yeah, I mean, the blog post is from a while ago, but I picked up on it and thought it was worth mentioning. So it shouldn't be, it's not new news, but it is. It should be new to your tenant. Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff is just starting to release or coming out to first release tenants at the beginning of October. So still moving along.
Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent. Should we jump back to some Cube news?
Yeah, this is a quick one. I'm not really sure that there's really news here, but the same week that I'm up here in SP Fest, or while we're doing this episode here, KubeCon is going on with the down in Austin, Texas. Mm. And there's a bunch of announcements that are very specific about containers, but I mean, they're getting like deep in the weeds of containers, like Containerd goes V1 and a bunch of other stuff. At Microsoft is there, and they're there showing off their wares of Azure Container Instances and talking about the container service with Kubernetes, the stuff we just talked about a minute ago, as well as their container registry with geo-replication. I got some links I'll put here in the show notes. They're not new links. They're still the same. They're the links from the previous announcements. Mm-hmm. But Microsoft is, you know, one of the big presenters there today at KubeCon, which is, you know, that shows very different Microsoft.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess that's some of those announcements came out a little while ago, but they're starting to, you know, talk about them in the right places in the ecosystem and things like that, which is nice.
Yep.
I do have a couple of quick things in the Azure space before we move on that happened yesterday, right before we recorded this. But before we do that, we'll make you all wait, and you can hear from one of our fantastic sponsors. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC. Okay. The excitement is palpable, I know, AC. You can't wait to hear this news, buddy, but there are more types of VMs to choose from.
Do you get overwhelmed by this?
Dude, there are so many acronyms and so many SKU names, I've got no idea what anything is these days.
I know that DV2 is the one that I usually want to go
That's
with.
That's what I pick.
Yeah, and beyond that, I'm just like, I mean, and I'm not complaining. Please, don't get me wrong, right?
Yeah.
But I'm just like, wow, there are so many different options that are available to you, which, I mean, choice is great, but it's like, it's like, you know, walking down the bread aisle at the grocery store and being like, I just want to make a freaking sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's there are a lot to choose from. And, you know, there's acronyms for all of these. There's like, you know, there's like the DV series, D2, DV2 series and A's and B's and all this. And I need to go look at a list every time because I can never remember what they all mean. But there are more. So there were two announcements yesterday. One was called Announcing the General Availability of B Series and M Series. So these are new virtual machine sizes. So the general availability of the B Series VMs. And the B Series, B is actually not too hard to remember because it stands for, I think, and I haven't heard this from Microsoft, but in my view, it makes sense. These are burstable.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Burstable instance sizes. So by that, what I mean is like you pay for, say, a B1, let's just for argument's sake, call it a B1, and you get one virtual CPU and 1 gig of memory and 4 gig of local SSD, and your baseline performance for the CPU is about 10% of a core, right? So normally your web app would, you know, sit below 10% and would only ever use 10%, but you can burst up to 100% of that CPU, and they're much cheaper, right? Because it's all, I don't know how they do this behind the scenes, they must be sharing a bunch of stuff. But anyway, so they're lower cost, but burstable. If you know what I mean. So I think it would make sense for like dev instances or maybe your blog, which maybe not yours, but maybe mine that doesn't get a lot of traffic. And maybe if I blogged, it might get more. But anyway.
It says development or test environments, web servers, small databases, where CPU utilization is low most of the time, but spikes for short durations.
Yes. Now, the complete opposite of this is the M series. So M series is GAing. And the new 4 terabyte size. So this might be more applicable to your blog.
Whoa.
M series are the biggest VMs, I think, the largest sizes in Azure. So for example, M64S has 64 virtual CPUs, 1,024 gigabytes, so a terabyte of memory, 2 terabytes of local SSD, and 32 data disks max. And then the largest one, which is the M128MS, has 128 virtual CPUs, 3,800 gigabytes of memory, so 3.8 terabytes, 4 terabytes of memory, 4 terabytes of local SSD, and 64 max data disks attached. So those are pretty big.
Yeah, just a bit. That's what does it stand for? M for massive? I guess these make sense for things like...
I don't know if it does, but that's a great call.
I think they're... What is it? They're... They're like workloads for things like SAP, which have a huge, huge thing. So huge requirements. I got to go find the pricing for this. I'm just
SAP
curious.
HANA is like their big ass in-memory databasey doodad thing. And they did a demo of that, right? I think at Build or whatever we showed, and they had like some absurd thing like 20 terabytes of RAM or something like that. But anyway, pretty sweet. So yes, Azure, massive VMs. Or since I'm freshly back from a Spanish-speaking country, Azure Mucho VMs. There you go.
I can't, it doesn't show up in the pricing.
You don't want to know, dude.
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. Maybe it's not showing up.
What is interesting is you have to specifically request access to request quota for these in your descriptions.
There we go.
Because I suspect your $150 MSDN credit would last about 5 seconds.
Now, get this. So the M64s, I found them. They're in East US. $19.90 an hour. Mm. But for the big one, the M128S one.
Yeah.
The MS one.
Yep.
Is $35.81 an hour. So what does that come out to?
$35 and how much?
$763 a day.
Wow, there you go. 30 grand a month, give or take, with tax.
$278,000 a year. for man, that'd be a hell of a Minecraft server.
Hey, you could run SharePoint on one VM. As opposed to these big ass farms that people talk about. Screw that, just do it all on one VM.
I wonder if the this shouldn't take long if that kind of disappears. You know, the whole when it's working on something, is it working on it? This shouldn't take long. It's a flicker.
I don't know, man. It probably still going to take a while. Yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah, that's kind of pricey.
Yeah, that's a bit. It's.
We should ask for one for free to run the podcast website. Just in the background, we could be running like a search for aliens or something.
You know, I told you our cost went up.
Yeah, we could be doing some city alien hunting or something like that.
Man. Those are some pretty big VMs.
Yeah. Okay, so that's some Azure news. More sizes, basically. Oh, there's another one. So we've got the Bs and the Ms. There's one more that I'll just briefly skip over. It's called the LV2 series VMs powered by AMD processors, apparently. The L series, so you can get like L8s, L16, L32 and L64 powered by AMD's. I don't even, is it EPYC, E-P-Y-C?
It looks like it, yeah.
EPYC processors, something along those lines.
Designed to support customers with demanding workloads like MongoDB, Cassandra, and Cloudera that are storage intensive and demanding high levels of I/O.
Yeah, the difference here is that like they've got, so the L8S has 8 virtual CPUs, which, yeah, okay, lots of other ones have 8 CPUs, but it's got 64 gig of RAM and a 2 terabyte local SSD attached. Mm-hmm. So if you need a bunch of storage and in-memory stuff, then it's probably a choice for that.
Could spend some money on some VMs today, man.
For sure, for sure. Okie doke, let us pause briefly and we'll be back with our pips.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
All right, AC, favorite part of the show. I know everybody's been waiting and with bated breath to hear what you have to say with your picks. You want to go first?
I do. I'm going to start looking at our picks. I'm going to go with our very science spacey picks. My first one is a link to a YouTube video. NASA is starting to design and work on their 2020 rover, the new rover that's going to go to Mars. And they are taking input and showing what's going on with it and going through the whole design piece and how a lot of the pieces of the rover is going to be coming from all these different countries. Next rover, here's some cool stuff about it. The next rover is going to have 23 different eyes. So quote unquote eyes. And then they've narrowed it down to 3 different landing sites of what they're going, where they're going to try and actually put this rover on Mars. So that's one.
That's really cool. I've got to watch that. I haven't seen that.
What they're doing is they also have new, this rover is going to be bigger than the last rover. And it's going to use, because right now we've maxed out the capability to slow down. We've reached the max size and weight of a rover that we can safely get to Mars because of the way it comes in and how we can, our parachute technology on being able to slow it down to get it there or to land it safely. When I was out at JPL many years ago, they were testing a new parachute, a supersonic parachute, and they're going to be using this to deliver this new bigger rover. So that's my link for the Mars 2020 rover.
Isn't that funny? Like, getting there is not the hard part.
Yeah, quote.
That's not the hard part. Stopping at the other end is, yeah.
The other link that I have here is, it's in beta of the guide. But do you find yourself challenged with lots of Lego?
The struggle's real, my friend.
It is. And you're a bit anal in your organization, right?
Not of my office at home, but in general, yes.
No, that's clear. I saw you the day. We recorded the day that before what you were leaving for Mexico. I got to see your backdrop in your office. It was the dumping ground.
Yeah, dude, one day Discovery Channel is going to come around and do a doco on hoarders, and I'm going to feature, my office will feature.
So this is a link. I subscribe to this guy's site. It's called thebrickarchitect.com. Hmm. And he has released the beta preview of his Lego storage guide. And he has multiple sections of it. How to organize, sort, and store your Lego bricks. And then displaying and storing Lego minifigures is a second section of it. It's really cool because it shows if you have a small collection, if you have a medium-sized collection, or if you have a big, well, he says large collection, big-ass collection. And he talks about the different containers that he uses, container with a C, uses, not like the things we talked about earlier today, and links to all the different storage things that he thinks are the best stuff that you can get from Amazon and all that stuff. It's
wow.
I got stuck reading through this and starting to get like, I almost want to send the link to my wife because she's tried to sort the Lego before. And yeah. I walk in and I'm just like, after she has all this work, and then her and the kids are all like, oh yeah, look at all the work that we did. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't going to last because this isn't the way to do it. I mean, now I can't find what I'm looking for. So
yeah, gotcha. Gosh, this is a rabbit hole I am going to jump down for sure.
Yeah, you can subscribe to the guy's mailing list too, which I would highly recommend doing. He shares some pretty cool stuff.
Hey, speaking of Lego, a friend of ours on Facebook posted a photo. I won't mention his name, but posted a photo on Facebook. He's about to start building the new Millennium Falcon, you know, the big one.
Yep.
But that wasn't the interesting part. It was the setting that he took the photo in. He basically has a Lego dungeon. And it just looks like some unused room in his basement or something. I don't really know. But there are shelves in the background stacked full of fascinating Lego sets and all built and looked amazing. And I was like, dude, you have a Lego room. It's like, who doesn't?
Me? I want one.
Yeah. So that was pretty funny. Okay, on to my picks.
Yeah, how about your picks?
How about for the most epic smackdown on Twitter ever from Elon Musk? So he posted a tweet. It's a sort of a series of tweets. One tweet says, Mars sky is the opposite of Earth, blue sunrise and sunset, red during the day. And then he followed up and said, why is there no flat Mars society? You know, like the flat earthers in this world?
Yep.
So he tweeted, why is there no flat Mars society? Anywho, so the Flat Earth Society or something responded and was like, said something along the lines of, oh, that's because we've observed that Mars is a sphere.
Yeah.
And everybody on the internet was like, what the f***? We've kind of observed that the Earth is a sphere too. You choose to ignore that part. Yeah. So apparently Flat Earth Society is okay with Mars being a sphere, but not the Earth. And Elon is like, yeah, whatever.
Now, okay, did you see, I saw your link in here at first that you were pointing to an Elon tweet. When you were in Mexico, did you see the other stuff that came out from him last week, about 5-6 days ago? Oh, you didn't then? No.
Maybe. You go ahead.
The payload for the Heavy?
Oh, yes. Yes.
See, he pissed off a lot of people about this too, because I've got some friends in the space media community, in the news community.
Yeah.
And so he's going to put his, on the first Falcon Heavy that flies in January, he's going to put his Roadster, his midnight cherry red Roadster, he's going to be blasting David Bowie's Space Oddity, and he's going to send it to Mars and have it orbit Mars if it doesn't blow up on liftoff.
Yeah. So I did see that, and I was like, that's epic. And then I stopped and I thought, I wonder if this was one of Elon's random, potentially drunken, insomnia-induced thoughts at like 2 a.m. that he may follow through on.
So the stuff that I've learned since then, and this is, I mean, part of this is from the news media who actually is down at the Cape. He said it, and then The Verge picked up and was like going, did you really mean that? And he's like, and his response was kind of cagey, like, oh, yeah, I made it all up. And they're like, oh, you made it all up. And he goes, well, yeah, but he's also made up SpaceX. I mean, it's like, he made it up as in like, that's what an entrepreneur generally uses as their saying to say, yes, I created this. So they took it as, oh, he made it up. And then he comes back and goes, no, it's real. And then a bunch of engineers at SpaceX going, oh, no, it's real. We're planning on doing it.
Yeah.
And I talked to a friend of mine down in the media and he goes, nope, he confirmed with us that it was all made up. And then he comes back on Facebook about 2 days later and he goes, oh, nope, apparently he's back on, he's actually doing this, and we're all pissed because our credibility is not shot.
You know, he, when he tweeted it, he probably did just make it up. And then they got together on Monday morning or whatever, and we're like, eh, sounds like a good idea. Let's do it.
Pretty freaking cool, though. Red car for the red planet.
Now they've got to. It would be so epic.
Yeah.
Speaking of space, after 37 years, this is my final pick. Mm. After 37 years, Voyager 1 has fired up its trajectory thrusters. So it's running short of fuel on its maneuvering thrusters, and they're figuring out how to keep it alive a little longer. And they've figured out that the trajectory thrusters that haven't been used in 37 years are a separate set of thrusters on the backside of the satellite or the spacecraft. And they can use those instead, but they've fired them up. They've been dormant since 1980, which has been quite a while, and apparently they worked really well. So it may give Voyager another couple of years, 2 to 3 years worth more beyond their maneuvering thrusters once those run out to maneuver. And the important part of this is they have to keep it pointing in the right direction to send signals back to Earth and receive signals from Earth. It's super important, or we won't be able to talk to it. So, yes, that is pretty cool, though. After, you know, 37 years, hitting the go button and having something that works, pretty impressive, and especially from that far away.
Yeah, it took 19 hours for Voyager to respond and said that, yes, it worked.
Yeah, and when they fire these things, they're little microbursts. And so it's not like you turn a booster, you know, turn on one of these thrusters and leave it on for a couple of minutes. They're doing 10 millisecond pulses of thrust just to tweak its orientation to point back at Earth. So that's pretty cool. Hey, I watched a great documentary. There's a really cool documentary about the Voyager mission on Netflix, if you're interested in. It's about the whole, how it all came to be, Voyager 1 and 2, how they went past the planets and out into interstellar space and all that sort of stuff. Voyager 2, I think, is about to go past the boundary. So definitely go watch that. Pretty cool.
Oh, I'm going to put that on my iPad for my flight home. Thank you.
It's got a lot of detail about how the golden record and what went on it came to be, and Carl Sagan putting it all together, and his son being on it, and a bunch of songs from Earth and images as well of Earth, and about 100 images of Earth. Anyway, so it's definitely worth checking out. But it was pretty cool because the scientists were like, they only really got sign-off to do flybys of, I think it was Jupiter and Saturn, perhaps, mm-hmm. something like that. And they were like, yeah, we're going to try and go long. And yeah. And you know, do as much as we can to keep the survivability of these spacecraft.
So for as possible. Be careful when you go search for it. Netflix listeners, don't type in Voyager. You get something very different in your search results.
Okay, but did you find it?
Yeah, after I modified my search. Yeah, I did find it. I have to kill my VPN to do it. It's called The Farthest, Voyager in Space.
Gotcha. There you go. Yeah, I watched it while I was getting a crown at the dentist the other day. It took my mind off the drilling. Anyway. All right, AC, let's wrap this one up. It's great to be back together on the show again. Sorry for not being with you the last couple of weeks, but thanks for holding down the fort, and nice to get back in our rhythm.
Absolutely. Good to have you back, man.
All right. Have a good one.
Take care.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.